Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub. It is Monday, April 4th, and today it's part two of our Team Needs plus NFL Draft Solutions series. Last week, we talked AFC Team Needs and Draft Solutions, so check that out if you missed it. Today, we're hitting the NFC, and to do that, I'm joined by Chrissy Freud and Kyle Dvorak. And guys, before we get started, it is the end of an era. Frank Gore hanging him up after 16 seasons. That news broke over the weekend. Age 38. Last season not included, guys. I found myself getting a little reflective, nostalgic here. This man has been in the NFL since 2005, which got me thinking. I was wondering, how have all of your lives changed since 2005? Chrissy, how is your life different since 2005?
Well, I was 6 years old, so I'd say that a lot has changed. I'm not a child anymore.
So lots
happened since then.
Six. Yeah, that's a decent one.
I was, I think, 8 or 7.
Wow.
So you probably threw this to like you needed to ask this to like Pat, because like Pat would have been Darty, not Crane, who also would have been relatively young. Darty would have had some like weird stories about like, would that have been like post college days? I'm sorry, Pat, if this is insulting, but it'd been like, yeah, it was my first year out of college. I was looking for a job. And instead, like Chrissy and I are both like, yeah, I don't even know if what's an 8 year old in like first grade? Like, I don't know. It's like still in diapers, I assume.
It was a Lion King era, if I'm not mistaken. Was it sometime ballpark? Was that the Lion King era? Didn't that movie come out sometime around then?
No, that had to be like late 90s, right?
Yeah, it was before 2005. I was a very sentient being in 2005. I have since 2005, I was thinking about this. I think I've moved 4 times. I've had 2 kids, and I went to 7 Olympic Games during Frank Gore's NFL career. So not as a competitor, as a writer.
We were actually concerned that we were like, oh, what did you compete in? We all thought that.
Yeah, did Strep do skeleton or something or what? Wild stuff. So you guys basically, I mean, your entire life, your almost your whole life spans Frank Gore's career.
Yeah, especially what you said about sentient life. Like that is like an important caveat. Yeah. Like I don't know what life was like in the late 90s. Like I was born in the 90s, but it doesn't make a make a real impact on my life, right? So most of my sentient life does kind of coincide with Frank Gore's NFL career.
Wow.
Like Frank Gore, the most I remember about Frank Gore is waiting for Carlos Hyde to take his job.
Yeah. Yeah. And then waiting about 10 years from retire, which he never did until now. So anyhow, after that moment of reflection, I feel, okay, I've got some perspective on my life and on your life. So let's get started. And before we do, we should mention there's a written series. There will be or is a written series of team needs and draft options, draft solutions on NBC Sports Edge. Kyle, and you've written that. You're writing that along with Tyler Fornes, if I'm not mistaken, right? You want to tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, that is correct. He knows so much more. So will Chrissy. So will most people know more about college football than I will, whereas I unfortunately know so much about so many NFL teams, especially like the ones that really need players, which is where Tyler comes in and helps me break down each player's best fits in terms of, you know, the Seahawks. Do they need a quarterback? What kind of quarterback do they would they be looking for? And actually, it's something we'll probably be talking about today. So stuff like that, where we have team fits married with someone who actually knows stuff about college football in Tyler, trying to piece together stuff for the draft, even for betting stuff. Like, I think it's really useful just to kind of line up where players could fall for betting stuff or just for the passing NFL fan.
All right. So basically today we're going to do the NFC version of this. So we're going to kind of start with the team need first, and then we'll kind of transition into the player. And we're going to be quarterback and receiver heavy on this episode for the most part. So let's start in Carolina. The Panthers, as we know, have the number six pick. And there's certainly more than a little bit of chatter that Malik Willis could be the guy for them at number six. So Kyle, for starters, how likely does that seem to you? And what are your thoughts on the fantasy fit for Willis if he does land in Carolina?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that you get a lot of like over-unders for player positions on like PointsBet, for instance. They don't have one. A lot of books, I don't know if any books have one from Malik Willis. And my lean is because it's almost like a binary outcome, right? Lions have, I think, reason to take him. I don't think they will, but kind of a reason to take him where they are at two. And then you move basically to Carolina, and that's it. Then there's kind of nebulous Steelers trade-up options, whereas someone like, you know, Trayvon Walker has probably got a pretty reasonable distribution. That's easy to put a number on, juice the sides how you want it, and that's how you put a line. You don't have that with Malik Willis, so I think that's why his line isn't up yet. I think the most likely outcome is that he goes to Carolina. Carolina, at his pro day, was one of just two teams. I believe Pittsburgh was the other one to send head coaches. They were also the only two teams to send head coach, offensive coordinator, and GM, which was pretty rare. They were the only teams to do all three. Pittsburgh, as we know, has pretty much made it a point year in, year out to say exactly who they want. And Carolina, now this offseason, spent the whole offseason signaling us that they want a new quarterback. Not much of a surprise given how Sam Darnold played. So if I had to bet, it'd be on Carolina taking him. I don't really see a team above them taking him. And I don't see a team trading up unless like Seattle wanted to jump the gun on that. I don't really think they're in a spot to be doing that though. Fantasy fit, like we've heard Matt Rhule talk so much about wanting to run the football more, even though they were not particularly good at running the football last year. They didn't have Christian McCaffrey, so it makes somewhat level of sense. But they don't also have like this mauling offensive line that's really going to set McCaffrey up for these great plays. You love McCaffrey because he catches passes, not because he's a Derrick Henry level runner, right? So like, it's good that that he will go to a spot where we expect him to, what is he going to like give up a game or two to Sam Darnold at most, and then he'll take over. Like that seems reasonable. It's good that he's probably starting all 17 games, if not, you know, 15 or so.
Yeah.
That's the fantasy upside. The fantasy downside is they want to run the football. They're not a particularly creative offense, and they don't have a lot of like, they don't have a great line. I think DJ Moore is a great number one receiver. Beyond that, they don't have a great three. Terrence Marshall's a complete flop from last year. Robbie Anderson, good. So I'd say it's kind of a wash. You want your starting quarterback, you want your fantasy quarterback to start nearly the whole season, but do you want them to go play for Matt Rhule? I don't think so.
Right. Certainly not ideal. Chrissy, assuming that Kyle's, you know, projection that let's say Malik Willis lands in Carolina and let's say he makes, you know, 15 starts. I mean, from what you've seen from this guy, could you see him being a guy who makes a dent in terms of fantasy?
Yeah, I think that if they're as reliant on him as some of us think that they might be, and they do select him, that he could be an early difference maker. But I still have a lot of question marks surrounding him being a consistently good passer. How much of a difference he's going to be able to make in the first year because of the transition from college to the NFL and all. There's just a lot of question marks that surround him to me. And so if I'm picking a quarterback in fantasy, I'd much rather draft one early and go with somebody like Tom Brady or Joe Burrow.
But like in terms of the rushing ability, Chrissy, like that's going to play at the pro level, right? Do we have any doubt about that? Do we have any concerns about that?
No, I think that he brings to the table a really solid level of athleticism, and he certainly can run the ball. But the only thing about that is the game changes a little bit at the next level. And we saw him doing a lot of running around behind the line of scrimmage, and I'm not sure how much he can do that in the NFL. And I mean, you can get hurt really easily doing that in the NFL too. So I'm going to be watching how that transition works and how much he can still do that at the NFL level.
Yeah, that sounds very like Justin Fieldsy, where you love the running until he immediately run, like first play, like the first game, I believe it was Browns, right? First game that he started was against the Browns, and everyone's like, oh, well, the Browns are like the chalk defense on DraftKings or whatever. And you're like, well, what if Justin Fields is really good as a rookie? And he could have been.
Yeah.
But man, watching him just run into sack after sack after sack, and it didn't stop with that Browns game. It just kept on going. That sounds very much what like Chrissy's describing in the Malik Willis effect. Sure, the running is great. Like running is just the cheat code in fantasy. But it's going to, like we saw with Justin Fields, it will lead to some rough games.
And some terrifying, man, did Justin Fields take a lot of terrifying hits as a rookie?
Didn't he get lit up in the preseason once too really bad, like in his first game?
It sounds right.
I'm pretty sure that happened.
I have so many visions of that guy taking hits that I was like, well, there, his season's over now. And he somehow dodged those. But so we kind of already addressed this a little bit, Kyle, as far as the Lions go. I mean, would they dare take Malik Willis at number two? It sounds like you're leaning toward that not happening.
Yeah, I would bet against that happening in terms of like the median projection, right? But they're certainly in the conversation. We know they need a quarterback. Jared Goff isn't the answer. He's the perfect quarterback to evaluate the rest of your roster. We talked about it last week. You need to see how good Amon Ross St. Brown is. You need a quarterback who can at least get him the ball, but he's just a bridge to the future. He'll be on the roster this year. Obviously, they would have already cut him if they could have, but they didn't. He'll be on the roster this year and at best like under a reduced price next year, but I really think they'll just cut him. I still think the roster is pretty far away from competing, right? They have a good line. They have at least one good receiver. DJ Chark's only on a one-year deal, so I won't count him as part of the future. But they need so much on defense. They need safety help, linebacker help, cornerbacks after Jeff Okuda doesn't really pan out and is hurt basically all of last year. Doesn't look like the answer. So I think, sure, they need a quarterback, but they need a quarterback in the next 2 to 3 years, and next year's quarterback class looks significantly better than this one. So if I am a GM who can afford to lose for another year, which not all GMs can, I don't think Dan Campbell can afford to lose another year with how much losing they did last year. But if you're trying to make optimal decisions over a 5 to 10 year window, I think they're a year out from taking quarterback. They could definitely pull the trigger. It's an eventual need. I don't think it's smart to make it a this year need, especially when you can just get an elite quarterback prospect next year, where Malik Willis is an interesting high upside quarterback prospect, but we're not talking about taking him at two because he falls in line with the previous twos. It's because he's the best of weak class.
Chrissy, a two-parter here. How do you like the hypothetical fit of Malik Willis in Detroit? And note, we should note, Detroit also picks 32nd. So are there any quarterbacks you've scouted that you like potentially to go to them there instead?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of smoke surrounding the possibility of Detroit taking Malik Willis at number two. And I really can't see them taking anyone else unless you want to go high floor, which is Kenny Pickett. And that's kind of the dilemma that we face, is whether it is the Detroit Lions or the Carolina Panthers, one of those teams is expected to take a quarterback. This team is taking a direct bet on, do you want the ceiling or do you want the floor? Because Kenny Pickett, highest floor, reasonable ceiling, but there's a very short gap in between there. And then Malik Willis, I think highest ceiling, lowest floor. I think he either becomes phenomenal, has really high upside, or he goes absolute bust. It's going to be one or the two. So I mean, I would see them picking either of those guys. And then what was the second part of the question again?
The second part of the question was just, would you see them potentially, you know, targeting a quarterback at 32nd? And if so, are there any QBs you like for them there?
Well, I think that that's not a good decision at that point. I think that this is going to be a defense heavy draft for Detroit. But I think that if somebody's going to be available there, there are some people that seem to think that Matt Corral might be available. I'm not so sure about that. Or maybe someone like Desmond Ridder. But at that point, I think that it's better to just go with another position.
Yeah, that feels like really passing the buck. Not only do you probably not get the upside, like you take Malik Willis at two, because you're like, he could be like, he could be an MVP. He could be that like Lamar Jackson second year type of explosion or whatever, or he could bust. But you don't gain that upside, but you still force yourself into a quarterback for the next, probably like most rookies are probably playing at least 2 years, even if they're terrible. So you still force yourself to work with a quarterback for the next 2 to 3 years that doesn't have the upside, but still locks you in. Like that's like the worst of both worlds. It's like the opposite of the middle of the Venn diagram, or at least it's the bad parts of the Venn diagram. So definitely two or bust, you know, two or next year, really.
Yeah, it's like a conservative swing for the fences. It's like a swing for the warning track. I don't know what the analogy is here.
I don't like the whole weak quarterback class narrative though, because I feel like there's going to be one guy, at least one guy, that absolutely pops in this class. And I think that we see a lot of quarterbacks where everyone has something missing, right? But everyone has, I think, at least solid foundational traits. A lot of them do. So I think we at least get a couple high-end backups, and there's going to be somebody that pops.
Do you have a lean on, if it's not Willis, sounds like you're like mixed on Pickett? You know, I think that's a pretty fair assessment of like, yeah, he looks like he's got all the trappings of a maybe starting quarterback. Like, can you see him being an MVP? I agree. I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's that high upside. Do you have a non-Willis Pickett?
As far as my QB1 goes?
Just anyone you think maybe is undervalued, especially by, you know, like I've just been like, yeah, people say it's a weak quarterback class. I'll buy that. Do you have someone who maybe defies the weak quarterback class narrative?
Well, I think that Bailey Zappe is still severely underrated, and I think that he's going to at least be a reliable backup and may even have starting potential, depending on how that shakes out. And then I think if Carson Strong is given a chance in a system that can help a pure pocket passer, or one that at least has a substantial offensive line and some receivers that are worth something, there's no quarterback in this class that's more developed as a passer. So I think that that's something that's being passed off. And we kind of saw it last year with not necessarily the same situation, the same case, but look at Mac Jones. A lot of people have Mac Jones at like QB5, goes to the Patriots and is doing extremely well.
All right, let's move to Seattle, where the Russell Wilson era is, of course, over. And what's left is apparently only Drew Lock. Kyle, are the Seahawks really planning to let Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf catch passes from Drew Lock this upcoming season? Is this where we're really headed?
So I think that would be somewhat in the Lions-Texans vein of logical if you're like, sure, let Drew Lock fail for 17 games right. and then move on to a good draft pick next year. Use your draft pick smartly this year at non-quarterback. But like, Pete Carroll, I believe, would be 71 almost exactly as the season starts. He doesn't look 71. He really has a lot of energy for a man that is older than my grandparents. But yeah. I cannot see at 71 where he's like, let's enter a three-year rebuild, and in 2026, we'll be a Super Bowl contender again. So I do think that they are like itching to get someone that isn't Drew Lock under center, even if maybe, again, that's not like the most optimal way to win over a 5 to 10 year span. I really cannot see Pete Carroll just accepting what is almost certainly like a six. I think they're lined at like six or six and a half wins, a six or six and a half win season, a six win season at 71 years old. I just can't. And his style, I just can't imagine Pete Carroll committing to losing. It's just not like him. So I think, and no one, like, I can't imagine they believe Drew Lock is the answer either, is the other part of that question. So I do think they're probably at least considering quarterback. I definitely think Malik Willis made it to them, they would probably take him. I don't think that's very likely.
I assume Pete Carroll is just assuming, based on what happened with Russell Wilson, that whatever quarterback they draft is just going to immediately pan out. They'll go, 11-6. That's what Pete Carroll thinks. He's been spoiled by the Russell Wilson situation, Christy. But what are your thoughts on this whole thing and possible draft solutions for Seattle when it comes to potentially upgrading over Drew Lock?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're able to do that this year. And I'm not sure that they're even going to have a chance at Willis, and maybe not even at Pickett, depending on where they try to do this. And then also just the question mark surrounding which quarterbacks are going to be available when. I mean, there's guys that are projected to go in the first or second round that are also projected to go in the third or fourth round. So I think, as far as if you want someone who is Russell Wilson-esque, and these guys, I don't really think they're going to be immediate impact players, but I think that Sam Howell and Desmond Ridder have both shown shades of Russell Wilson in their game and could kind of come into the mix with some of that. But I'm not sure that I see Seattle going that direction either.
I had Ridder written down, if he somehow makes it, it's very possible he makes it out of the first round. Like you said, with anyone who isn't really Pickett or Willis, and we see this every year, like, you'll see someone throw, like last year, Kellen Mond into the first round. You're like, that's no way that happens, right? Like, I don't know, maybe it could happen. So with anyone that isn't like the locked in top 2 to 3 guys, totally, their range is like, someone sneaks into the back end of the first round so they can tack that fifth-year option onto their contract, or they fall all the way to like the third, fourth round. I had Ridder pegged as like a guy, I believe they have both 40 and 41 that they could take there. He seems to be like a sort of, I agree, it's kind of like Russell Wilson-esque, where he's got legs, but it's not like the foundation right. of his game is built on running. So I think he could be, and like, coaches just seem to absolutely love Ridder. I totally get that. So he seems like he'd be like a cultural fit, the way that like we saw Pete Carroll like take his shirt off and flex with DK Metcalf when they got him or whatever. It seems like he could both be somewhat of a stylistic fit. No one's going to just match Russell Wilson out of the gate, but maybe that's where you project him to be, and both a cultural fit as well. So I had him pegged, if he makes it out of the first, for them at 40/41.
Yeah, I had actually spoken to Desmond Ridder about if he would be perceived as maybe more of a Marcus Mariota type, if he had played in more of a freewheeling offense that demanded some more mobility, because you look at the Cincinnati offense didn't necessarily always demand that. And he said that he thought that maybe he could, and that Mariota was someone that he had watched before. So I think that between his combine showing the athleticism, he said that he thought he really impressed there with that, that he could become someone who could slip more into that role and could be a lot more athletic and a lot more mobile even than we're giving him credit for now.
Yeah, his athleticism at the combine blew me away. Like, I knew he had like legs or whatever, but what, 4.52, I believe, was the official time? That's so crazy fast for like, that's like a really good running back time for like a guy. He's like, what, 6'3 or something? Like, a guy of his size, that'd be a really good time for a running back. So I did not expect that. I expected a good, a solid 40 time, but that's like, I think that's 97th percentile per player profile. It's some of the best you'll find for a quarterback.
So why is it then, Chrissy, that we're talking about this as a guy who could go, in the second round? I mean, what is it about Ridder that could potentially scare people off? What's not to like, I guess?
Well, there was a lack of accuracy, I thought, and some inconsistencies as a passer that he showed throughout the season. He's been training with Jordan Palmer, and probably half of our conversation when I talked to Desmond Ridder was about his fine-tuning lower body mechanics, finding more balance in the pocket, and trying to do things like that. And I think that his accuracy has gone up, and I think that he threw the ball really well in some of these offseason showcases. So if that progress holds true, then maybe he's a guy that emerges more than we thought he could, on top of the fact that maybe he does have some of the best foundational traits despite looking lackluster at some points last year. But I mean, that's another conversation to have, is how much does this offseason stuff mean? Because maybe they have taken a jump. There is some substance to offseason training, but it's also curious to me how Malik Willis has risen from like QB3 or QB4 up to almost a consensus QB1 or QB2, because he suddenly discovered, oh, I know how to throw the ball with touch now. And I did it for a combined, what, somewhere between 5 to 10 days between the Senior Bowl and the combine.
Yeah, I hate to like denigrate the work of a quarterback guru, but I really do feel like he was all, like, it was like it's the Jameis Winston in the NFL special. Every offseason, he's really working on not making mistakes. And then he shows you that, well, the thousands of snaps he's put on film up until that point are going to give us so much more evidence of who he is as a player on the field than, you know, the reports of, oh, well, you know, I'm working on my footwork. Like, that's great, but you were doing that last year and the year before. So yeah, I kind of really downweight the idea that like we can find something new from a quarterback just in the offseason.
Okay, we have more to hit, some wide receiver talk coming up and some talk on the aforementioned Jameis Winston. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The 2022 NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide is available now, and we're giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off our draft guide and an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASES22. We get you ready for your fantasy draft with expert insight and tools at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus. Use promo code BASES22 at checkout to save big this season. Let's go to Philly now, where the Eagles have three picks in the top 20. That's 15, 16, and 19. We think they think that they have their quarterback in Jalen Hurts, Kyle. So what do you think the Eagles do with those three firsts? And do you think wide receiver becomes a priority even after they took Devontae Smith last year?
Yeah, it's funny. They keep taking receivers, and for the most part, they haven't worked out very well outside of Devonta Smith. Like the obvious bust, and like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Jalen Reagor. Despite the spend, you hope that they don't see the spend as sort of filling the quota of, well, we spent on receiver, because you should really just be looking at what your team needs and are there players available, especially if it's like a position of importance, obviously, and there are players available to fit it. It looks like a good receiver class. I'd be interested to see how they view Devonta Smith, because last year he was like almost perfectly split in where he was getting his targets, deep, middle, and short, and then really nothing behind the line of scrimmage, which wasn't exactly how he's used in college, which was interesting, but it's so hard to evaluate like what you want to do with a player when like Devon Smith has to be everything outside of Dallas Goedert. Like, you have no one else to catch passes, so you don't have the luxury of maybe using him as that often targeted field stretcher if that's how you want to use his speed, right? So I still think they're probably best set up using him as the Z than playing like a larger X receiver. And I think there are maybe some options. The interesting thing is the guys who win in the short and intermediate are not these, like, you don't find tons of big alphas these days. I feel like we're kind of sort of moving past the days of Julio Jones and AJ Green. We haven't seen a ton of those prospects in a while. But I'd be interested to see if they want like a Garrett Wilson, or even if they want to look later. Sky Moore wins in those areas. He just doesn't have that size. He has like Antonio Brown size, but like, he wins in those areas so well. This was PFF's Dwayne McFarland showing that like 65% of the routes that are run are like, you know, slants, hitches, stuff like that. And he was the highest yards per route run in the grouping of what I think he's called like NFL routes or something. It's a snappy way to pinch together all the ways NFL receivers are mostly making their bread. Highest yards per route run among FBS receivers was Sky Moore. So be interesting to see. He's probably not in contention for them at 15, 16, 19, but I would like him as a fit opposite Devonta Smith.
Chrissy, you specialize in covering quarterbacks, but that obviously means watching a lot of wide receivers as well. Thinking about this Philadelphia team and some of the names Kyle mentioned or didn't mention, are there any receivers you especially like for Philly in that range where they will be picking?
Yeah, how about the rise of Sky Moore, though? I think it's really interesting. I went from an under-the-radar guy to someone who has very much proven himself, someone who'd be in the first round, though I think he is going to go later than this. At 15 for Philadelphia, I like Drake London, guy with a really high football IQ. And if you look at that USC team from this past year, he is easily one of the brightest spots and one of the only bright spots that they had, and probably one of the only reasons why the Trojans found any success this past year.
Yeah, he has like the perfect size to be opposite a very like good plays above his size, Devon Smith, but like Smith is a very small receiver just in terms of his weight. He came in, I think, under 180. So ideally, you probably want someone who is much bigger, and Drake London is much bigger, to just balance out like stylistic fits against different corners. So yeah, that's what I was thinking about. He's like one of the only big-bodied receivers really looking at going in the first 20 picks or so.
We kind of worry, though. Do we worry a little bit about whatever kind of first-round receiver goes to Philly, that can that offense really fantasy-wise, Kyle, support three pass catchers? Like, based on what we saw last year, does that concern you at all?
Yeah, it won't be the sexiest landing spot, because we saw last year they spent, I think it was like six games as one of the, actually they had the least running back rush attempts in the NFL by a pretty considerable margin. And then that just like wasn't necessarily working. It wasn't like terrible, but it wasn't resulting in them like blowing out opponents. And instead they completely switched, just like the most sudden philosophical shift you will ever find in the middle of a season. And they became the run heaviest team in the NFL by a pretty considerable margin from like week seven onward. Yeah, there's not going to be a ton of targets to go around. There's a good target share, but that's only the percentage of the pie. So it won't be the sexiest landing spot. I think Devonta Smith probably has the chops to lead his team in targets. He did really well in a very difficult spot last year. So you're looking at second, maybe even third on your team in targets. And it's a team that just wants to run the football. And when you have like good running backs, especially a good running quarterback, it's analytics nerds among us will be like, yeah, you should probably just throw the football a ton. But I understand the rationale of letting them run the football a lot. They have a good line, good running quarterback. So no, this is not it's not a sexy or exciting fantasy fit, and that's okay. Like, we will probably adjust to that in our rookie drafts and our best ball drafts. It's perfectly fine. That player can still be undervalued at the right price, but like, no, it's not going to be a huge breakout from year one, I don't think.
All right, let's go to the NFC South, where the Saints quarterback picture, I guess, has some clarity to some extent, right? Jameis Winston is back. They've added Andy Dalton, who says he does not expect to challenge Jameis Winston for the starting job. Do with that what you will. I guess Taysom Hill is going back to his kind of gadget role for now. Chrissy, I want to get your thoughts on this situation in a second, but Kyle, do you think the Saints here are better off with Jameis plus an early receiver in the draft? Or, I mean, could you envision them? It's hard to picture them now taking, an early quarterback in this draft, right? Given what they've done this offseason.
I think it's unlikely, but still interesting, because like, is Jameis really the long-term answer? He looked better last year, right? But they also were just giving him such limited passing volume that it's kind of hard to evaluate him based on everything we saw in Tampa Bay. It was pretty similar Jameis stuff, the fun, exciting stuff, and then just like the incredibly mind-boggling bad interceptions. Like, right. So fun, such a fun brand of football to watch. And they kind of deprived us of that last year, because they were just like, we're just going to keep running. And when you have a player that's as volatile as Jameis, it kind of makes sense. Like, I can't see him as a long-term answer. And the fact that he got like a two-year contract, quarterbacks who are the long-term answer do not get two-year contracts in the NFL. So it's telling us they see him as like bridge plus. And their cap situation is so bad. Even next year, they're still projected right now to be like $33 million over the cap, that I think the thing that makes the most sense, and again, teams don't often like plan 10 years out as these grand schemes, would be to have a rookie quarterback on the roster who can eventually, like, the value of the rookie contract is so good for quarterbacks, right? And it will help you get out of cap hell in 2 years or whatever it may be if he can take over as a starter. I don't think it's awfully likely that they choose that route, especially just like you said, they have now Andy Dalton, like Ian Book, for what it's worth, although it's probably not worth much these days, but it's roster spots taken up, right? And yeah. Taysom Hill is like a swing quarterback, if that's such a thing. They say they're moving him back to tight end, but I assume if James got hurt, he'd probably move back to quarterback. So maybe they have, if they consider Book kind of a sunk cost, which maybe you should, and then Taysom Hill is now officially a tight end per their words, maybe that is the roster spot opening for a rookie quarterback. I think it would be smart. I'm not sure if it's what they do, but like I said, the Winston contract makes it seem like they know he's not like the long-term five-year answer.
Chrissy, what are your thoughts on this whole New Orleans quarterback situation? Like, let's say they do go the route that I was talking about and get a rookie quarterback on the roster. Is there anyone you like as a potential fit there?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do it early. And there's a lot for Winston to still continue working on as a pure passer. Mm-hmm. And he says that he's working on his intermediate accuracy this offseason, but we'll see how much that pans out. I think that Winston is a low ceiling player, very shaky, very inconsistent, not my favorite quarterback for sure. I think if they go first round, Ritter or Corral is going to be your best option at that point. I don't think that they do. I think that maybe if you go beyond, Carson Strong is my number one quarterback, but he is not projected to be in the first round any longer. So maybe they have a chance to come pick him up later on. And this is a player who has been tied to them because Carson Strong did tell me at the Senior Bowl that he met with them, that the meeting went well. And then his coaches, people close to him, have told me that they've received several calls from the Saints. So whether or not it's just due diligence or not, there's definitely been some confirmed interest there.
Just remind us what they would be getting if they did get Carson Strong in terms of the prospect.
Well, you would get the best pure passer in the class, someone with a high football IQ, I think. And really, whenever it comes to mobility and stuff like that, I don't put a lot of emphasis on that. But I think that there was this narrative going around that he was a statue, and he's shown this offseason. And I think even if you go back and look through the tape, especially early on at Nevada, that he can evade pressure, and if he absolutely has to carry the ball, he can. So I think if you're looking for someone who's refined throwing the ball, someone who has a high floor with that type of stuff, I think that he's definitely the guy you want to go with.
Best pure passer in the draft, Kyle, would probably be music to Saints fans' ears after the last season or so post Drew Brees, I'd imagine.
I could go for not another season of Taysom Hill picking up like four starts at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And it makes sense too, because they have so much of like I was saying, the roster is financially tied down, but it also means they have a lot of good players they're paying a lot of money for. But they're I don't think a lot of teams are winning now. Like Washington keeps convincing themselves like we're a Carson Wentz away from a real good playoff run. Like they're probably not. The Saints actually somewhat are, at least. They have a pretty solid roster, enough so that if they get not a massive hit, but just a reasonable hit at quarterback, they probably are somewhat of a win now team. So I do think taking the high floor, like good passer style of quarterback in the draft, whether it be first round or not, makes more sense for them than it would for most teams.
All right, finally, we know another team that absolutely needs a wide receiver is the Packers after losing Davante Adams. Let's play a little bit of Green Bay wide receiver matchmaker. Kyle, is there anyone you immediately like for Green Bay as a fit with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, this is so difficult because with like a team like the Cowboys or a team like the Cardinals, who both pick after their first pick, Green Bay's first pick, that is, they have like more of a specific role to fill. Davante Adams isn't a role. He is a unique beast of a player who can do so many different things. And they also lost MVS, which is not like not to go underlooked because he does so much, at least moving safeties deep and helping you get those Adams routes open. Not that he really needs help, but right, it's not just we need the field stretcher, right? Well, you need the field stretcher, you need the guy who can pick up 180 targets a season. You just don't find those guys in the draft.
Yeah.
So I think it makes so much sense for them to take I think it makes sense for them to take quarterbacks with both of their first round picks. I don't think they'll probably do that. I think Garrett Wilson, he doesn't quite have that like a few players do. I said we don't see these players as much anymore. Doesn't have prototypical X size, but he can move pretty much anywhere on the field. And that NFL routes thing I was telling you about from Dwayne McFarland, basically where receivers winning in the NFL, he was second in yards per route run on those routes in college specifically, and playing at a higher level than Sky Moore necessarily. So I think he makes some sense, but it really will just have to be. I also like Treylon Burks. I just think Treylon Burks is a really good analytical profile. But yeah. I think this has to be a community effort from hopefully multiple draft picks.
We could see a run. The potential is there's a few possibilities for receivers to be picked in the 22 range with the Packers, Cardinals, and the Cowboys at 23 and 24. Chrissy, from your scouting, anyone Kyle mentioned or any wide receivers you like in that range in particular?
Yeah, I mentioned how much I like Sky Moore and his ability to get through the tackles. I think that Jahan Dotson from Penn State showed some good route running ability. And then we can't forget about Christian Watson, who I think could go relatively early on, somewhere around the middle of this thing, possibly. Really big riser who made a really big statement despite playing in a really run-heavy offense with the Bison. So I think we saw just the tip of the iceberg of what he can do, and he's someone that I expect to really take off in the NFL.
Yeah, so even before Davante Adams was traded, they were an obvious spot. They were losing MVS to free agency,
right?
And like they had to make Randall Cobb take a pay cut because he's like not worth paying much more than the vet min. I had them as at least needing a modest upgrade at receiver, probably losing MVS and just replacing him. And Christian Watson like looks like the perfect type of replacement for that, like game-breaking speed, while still not losing out on size either. So I had him written down as the MVS replacement. And I still think I'd love to see like Sky Moore play with Aaron Rodgers, even though somehow like Aaron Rodgers would just find a way to be like, no, I don't like him. We're just going to give Alan Lazard 150 targets, and it wouldn't go well.
All we just need someone to have just, you know, an incredible skill set, an incredible ability to get open, and a perfect mind meld with Aaron Rodgers. That should be easy to find, right? Like, no issues.
And a great red zone weapon as well. Literally playing like goal line back once a game, but as a wide receiver split out wide. No, just like fill all of those things and they should be fine.
Yeah, and yeah, it's fine. You get a lot of options there. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a minute to rate and review our show as well. And make sure you check out both Chrissy and Kyle's work on NBC Sports Edge, including the aforementioned NFC team needs and draft options that Kyle's writing with Tyler Fornes. Want to say thanks to everyone for listening and watching live. Chrissy, Kyle, thanks to both of you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.